Good afternoon and welcome back to the Better Living Radio program. My name is Peter Lewis and I'm pleased to be able to join you at home or in your car or at your place of business. We have a very special guest with us today whom I'll be introducing to you in just a few moments as we'll be talking about health, insulin resistance. But before we do, I'd like to open a word of scripture. The Bible says in Ecclesiastes 10 and verse 17, "Blessed art thou, O land, when thy king is the son of nobles, and thy princes eat in due seasons for strength and not for drunkenness." Now here the Bible talks about eating for strength and not for drunkenness, and we'll see that come into play in our discussion perhaps as we talk with Dr. Guthrie. Another text I'd like to read for our listeners. It says, "Behold, this was the iniquity of thy sister Sodom, pride, fullness of bread, and abundance of idleness was in her and in her daughters. Neither did she strengthen the hands of the poor and needy." All right, Dr. Guthrie would like to welcome you to the Better Living Radio program.
It's a pleasure to be here, Peter.
That's great. I'd like, for the benefit of our listeners, for you just to tell us a little bit about yourself. I know a little, but would you mind telling us a little bit?
Yes, I am a medical doctor with a board certification in family practice and nutrition, who is medical director of a Lifestyle Center of America. Lifestyle Center of America is in the south central Oklahoma, little town of Sulphur. We help people from all over the country address their lifestyle diseases, in particular diabetes, hypertension, heart disease, and obesity, using their lifestyle choices. So we are dealing with the underlying cause of the disease rather than just giving people medications. So it's an exciting work to be in. I focus quite a bit on the treating of type 2 diabetes. I guess our discussion today is actually about insulin resistance and maybe the metabolic syndrome.
That's right. Thank you very much, Dr. George Guthrie, calling in from Oklahoma. Today, let's talk about insulin resistance. Which factors in with the diabetic situation? What are we looking at when we think about insulin resistance?
Well, as you know, insulin, or many people know, insulin is a hormone of the body that helps the cells of the body take energy into them. In essence, and I like to tell those that I speak with, that insulin is the Paul Revere hormone. When energy comes into the body, insulin sends out the message that the energy is coming.
Okay.
Each cell gets that message and opens up to let that energy in. So that would be called insulin sensitivity. Insulin resistance is the opposite of that. Insulin resistance is when a cell or a group of cells is actually saying, you know, I don't need any more energy. Now, I noticed when you read that second text, and I missed exactly where that was, but it talked about those folks in Sodom who sat around a lot and didn't do very much work.
Didn't do very much work at all.
Well, insulin resistance actually comes from not enough exercise, not enough work, not enough physical activity, and too many calories in. Imagine if you were I'm going to be running a race, a marathon race. As I begin that race, the thigh muscles in my body really need energy. If I take, as I say I'm running, it's the fourth mile out, and I pick up a bottle of fruit juice of some kind and I drink it, it goes into my stomach, it goes to my pancreas says, there's energy coming, and the insulin, or the Paul Revere hormone, goes out to the body. And it lets all the cells know there's energy coming. My thigh muscles are just overjoyed to get that energy. And they just open right up and let it in. While there are other cells in the body that don't need as much energy. Take, for example, my eye blinkers. You know, the ones that close the eyelid?
Yes, sir.
No matter what they're doing, or what I'm doing, they're doing about the same thing. If I'm running a race or watching TV or reading a book, they're just cleaning the windshield.
That's all right.
So they don't need as much, and they won't take quite as much of the energy. Mm-hmm. Each cell decides how much energy it needs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as we focus on insulin resistance, we have another situation, another word picture that comes into play. The word picture I like to use here is couch potato. Sitting in a chair with a lamp, you know, there's a TV out there with a couple of remotes.
Mm-hmm.
I see a finished bowl of ice cream. I see on the left side of the chair on the floor a box of Oreo cookies with 1.5 rows gone.
Wow.
I hear crinkly sounds as if something is being eaten out of a crinkly bag.
And
all of these things, lots of calories and no exercise.
Yeah.
Now, if all those calories come in and the Paul Revere hormone sends out the message, or the pancreas sends out the Paul Revere hormone saying, the energy is coming, what do you think the thigh muscle of the couch potato says?
I don't need no more energy. I'm not doing anything.
That's the definition of insulin resistance.
All right.
Saying, no, I don't need any more. And the cells of the thigh muscles would then say no. Now, if it's just one or two cells that are saying this, it's not a big deal. That's normal physiology. But if all the cells in the body, or almost all the cells of the body, are saying, no, I don't need any, then we say that the whole body has insulin resistance.
Well,
that's probably about as well as I can do is explaining it in simple terms. Does that help?
Yes, that's very helpful. So in this situation where there's insulin resistance and abundance of energy on the outside of the cell, and the cells say, I don't need no more energy to do any more work. I'm not being worked hard enough. And what are we looking at then as this situation builds? How does this affect a person's health?
That is of great interest to me and should be of great interest to our listeners as well. I would like to let you know that what happens first, the very first thing when there's insulin resistance, is the body starts to make more insulin. The pancreas tries to get the sugar out of the bloodstream and into the cells. So you've got the pancreas saying, take it, and you have the cell saying, no, I don't want it. So the pancreas screams louder and louder. That is, there's more and more insulin in the blood.
Okay.
Now, high insulin in the blood tends to make some very interesting things happen. Number one, it tends to make us gain weight. Insulin is a hormone of growth. When insulin goes up, we get larger. How often do I run into people who say, Doc, I was a jock in college and got a good administrative job. Now, you know, I'm an executive in the company. I've been able to maintain my weight over the years, but these last 7 years, Doc, my weight, I just can't get it off no matter how much I exercise. Well, I know that person's insulin levels are going up. It's almost impossible to lose weight with high insulin levels. So high insulin levels tends to make the weight go up.
Okay.
High insulin levels is also associated with high blood pressure. Now, the exact cause of this, we're not 100% sure. I can tell you that insulin makes the kidneys hang on to more sodium. That holds water into the body's pipes. And if there's more water in the pipes, there's going to be more pressure.
Absolutely.
It may have something to do with calcium flux and the endothelium of the blood vessels. Now, I apologize, Peter, for using such big medical words.
That's all right.
It gives you the idea that there are several explanations that may all work together
sure.
to explain why high blood pressure tends to come when insulin levels go up.
Okay.
Now, another effect of high insulin levels, and this really hits home, it's almost a direct effect. The higher your insulin levels, the more cholesterol you're going to make. The more of the bad cholesterol and the less of the good cholesterol.
Wow.
So that's increasing the risk of, you got it, heart attack.
Heart attack, that's right.
So here we have it. Obesity, overweight, hypertension, heart attacks, and then when the insulin resistance is at its greatest, getting worse, we finally see diabetes, type 2 diabetes coming. These four diseases are really one disease. caused by, usually, high insulin levels in the bloodstream.
So we're looking at just different stages in the same disease.
Right. As a matter of fact, if you look around and at people who have these diseases, you'll find that they tend to come in groups.
Yeah.
It's not which disease do you have, it's which disease don't you have.
That's right.
Some may be not have the high blood pressure, but they have the weight and the diabetes and the obesity.
Uh-huh.
So there's different patterns that individuals have. All those patterns really come under the rubric of insulin resistance syndrome, or as it's now being called, metabolic syndrome.
Wow. So, as we look at the situation here with the excessive insulin in the bloodstream, we're going to be addressing this more in our next program, but automatically I'm seeing high insulin, high calorie, and low energy output.
Yes.
And that's a big problem, isn't it?
Diabetes is something they catch, and they can't do anything about it.
Uh-huh.
It's almost like stubbing your toe or an infection that you've got.
Uh-huh.
Diabetes, hypertension, heart disease, and obesity are really lifestyle diseases.
Hmm.
We might say, okay, my parents gave me some genes that make me at higher risk for some of these things. Okay, maybe we could say the genetics, your parents loaded the gun, but you pull the trigger.
Right.
You see, if you live in a way in which you have too many calories in and you don't exercise enough, you're setting yourself up for insulin resistance and this cluster of diseases. Now, the implications are that you're personally responsible.
Absolutely.
Scary.
Absolutely.
It also says very strongly that if your doctor is simply giving you a pill to manage your sugar and ignoring the underlying insulin resistance, then you're not getting the treatment for the cause.
Absolutely.
You're just like putting a Band-Aid on it.
Absolutely.
I'm a physician. I prescribe medications for people, but they've got to do the lifestyle first. They need to decrease their energy in and increase their energy out.
Hmm.
Increasing the energy out is simply exercise.
Exercise.
You can get that in numerous ways, from working to the garden, from to parking at the far end of the parking lot at Walmart, or, you know, there's all kinds of ways to get exercise.
Uh-huh.
The first one, diet, that is decreasing the number of calories in. You know, none of us want to be hungry.
Yeah.
Indeed, you don't have to be hungry to decrease your calories.
Right.
If you choose food that is very high in fiber.
That's right.
Foods in general that are high in fiber tend to be high in other nutrients as well.
Absolutely.
We talk about fruits, vegetables, and whole grain.
Hmm.
Fiber, by definition, has not digested. You put it in your mouth, it comes out on the backside pretty much unchanged.
That's right.
So it has no calories in it. You can fill up on high fiber foods and not be hungry, and yet take in fewer calories.
Absolutely.
The ones that get us are those that are, they take the good, healthy potato, they dip it in oil and put salt on it, they call it a potato chip.
Uh-huh.
So that's all the vegetables some people get.
But yeah.
With all that oil and so little fiber, this is a calorie bomb with very little good nutrition.
Wow.
Setting people up for these four diseases, insulin resistance, and the cluster of diseases that comes with it.
Wow, that's amazing. So we have people out there walking around who may be affected at the early stage with insulin resistance.
Yes, some estimates are in the realm of two people for every five of those over age 60.
Hmm.
There's a lot of people out there, and the numbers keep going up.
Wow. Now, so we're looking at a situation here where a person might not at this stage be diagnosed with diabetes.
Right.
But they could be as surely on their way to diabetes as they can possibly be.
That's exactly right. The National Institute of Health Institute of Health has given us a way of defining this thing that you and I may want to call pre-diabetes.
Okay.
Okay, they call it kind of metabolic syndrome, or they have some other scientific names for it, but you and I can call it pre-diabetes. If your blood pressure is starting up, if your cholesterol is starting up, if your good cholesterol is going down, if your fasting blood sugar is going up, if your abdominal girth is increasing, all it takes is 3 out of 5 to make the diagnosis of insulin resistant syndrome or prediabetes.
Wow.
Millions of people in this country have that syndrome without knowing how serious it is.
Now, obesity is getting to be epidemic proportion in the United States and perhaps another industrialized nation.
Yes.
What can we say in regard to obesity here?
Well, obesity and diabetes are very closely tied together, especially the type 2 diabetes. And it's so closely tied together in most people that doctors have even coined a new word. They call it diabesity. Kind of putting diabetes and obesity together in one word.
Mm-hmm.
When you get overweight, you're developing insulin resistance. Your pancreas is working harder, and it's being slowly burned out. And over time, it might be 5, 10, 15, 20, even 30 years, it may catch up with you, depending on the genetic strength that your parents and grandparents have given you.
Wow. You know, in a medical physiology book I have here, it states that an insulin bind to a specific receptor protein in the muscle. And it goes on to talk about, as a person's weight increases, that the amount of insulin receptors or doorways usually decrease. And as their weight decreases, the insulin receptor, which are the doors for the insulin and the sugars to come in, increases. What can you say there, Dr. Guthrie?
It is absolutely amazing what happens in our cells if we put too much energy in and don't exercise enough. The cells actually start to cut back on the number of receptors. They don't recycle the receptors. They don't recycle the glucose transporters. They don't put those out to the cell wall either. The good news is, if you lose weight, the body will actually reverse that. There is a change in the expression of genes within a cell depending on your lifestyle.
So a person who faithfully takes their medication, let's say for high cholesterol and so on, if that is all they're doing lifestyle-wise, can they expect a cure?
That's a very good question. Please, when you're just focusing on the numbers, you're missing something. I'm reminded of a cartoon I saw once. There were 3 janitors in a janitor's closet. It looked like a school of some kind. The sink is plugged up. The water is on. The sink is overflowing onto the floor, and there are the janitors with mops trying to clean it up.
Wow.
They haven't turned the water off, and they haven't pulled the plug on the sink. It just doesn't make sense to chase the stuff that's spilled out on the floor. When the cholesterol is up, if you take a pill, yes, it gives you some benefit. It may, you know, keep the floor a little drier for a while, but unless you deal with the underlying cause, unless you decrease the calories in and increase the calories out, you're just kind of putting a Band-Aid on it. Things are going to continue to get worse.
Hmm.
We like to say it like this here at Lifestyle Center of America. If you keep doing what you're doing, you're going to keep getting what you got.
Wow. That is so true. But, you know, people for one reason or another have the notion that all I need to do is to take my doctor's pill. And, I mean, a physician is supposed to be an educator, to educate the people in healthful principles. I mean, maybe you need to speak to the doctors and the physicians in our listening audience, or maybe some of the patients will tell the doctor this message here.
I'm very much in agreement with you, but having come through a medical education, I know that I received excellent education on the importance of what we call non-drug therapy. that okay. is helping patients to make the appropriate lifestyle choices. Now, it's true the busyness of a doctor makes it harder to do, but let me put some of the blame on the patient.
Yeah.
So we live in a Polaroid society. People want whatever they want now.
Yeah.
And so I found, as I practice medicine and I try to tell people what to do, they'll often, 80, 90% of the time, say, oh, come on, doc, just give me the pill. You see, they're focusing on just the numbers, just the externals, without being willing to address the underlying cause. It's hard to change our habits.
So we're looking at a spiritual problem there because, you know, habits once formed are powerless against the tide of evil. Once habits are formed, it's not very easy to break those habits, are they?
Yes, and now you've put this in spiritual and religious terms, and I'd like to say a little bit of something about that.
Sure.
The laws of health work whether we understand them or not.
Okay.
I remember Jesus telling the Pharisees something like, when they didn't know, they didn't have the guilt. It wasn't until they claimed to know that they got the guilt.
Uh-huh.
You see, you can have a disease because you don't know what's best for you.
Absolutely.
And yes, those are habits, and those are things that will ruin our health. Where I would hate to say someone like that is guilty of some sort of a terrible sin because
right.
they didn't know.
Right.
But once they learn, they have an opportunity to change. And I would put forth to you that God gives us an opportunity, which He gives us the knowledge.
Yeah.
And then He comes to us to help us change our habits.
Hmm.
As we do that, we can experience the healing that comes from obedience to the laws of health.
Wow.
To exercise adequately. If you eat appropriately, that is, not too many calories, high fiber, high nutrient-dense foods, if you choose those and do appropriately, those diseases can actually go away.
Hmm.
I like to call it grace. I mean,
wow.
God is good. He has built within our bodies the ability for them to actually heal.
Yeah. Wow, that is amazing. So, our listeners, we can see that God has made provision for healing and restoration of the body. And if we would only cooperate with Him, He says in 3 John 2, Beloved, I wish above all things that thou mayest prosper and be in health. You know, in today's society where people drink so little water and pay so little attention to the laws of health, you know, I can imagine a lot of people going on out there are tired. By the way, would the insulin resistance situation affect a person's energy level and stamina?
Oh, absolutely. I can tell you, we're just finishing an 18-day program where people have come to Lifestyle Center of America for 18 days. It is amazing. It is miraculous. I've been medical director here for about 4 years now. And as I see people come in just hardly able to move, they try to go to sleep while I'm talking to them. Now they're up and alert, their cholesterols have come down, they've lost weight, their blood sugars are under control, they understand the disease, they're taking control, they're doing something.
Mm.
Their spiritual health is rejuvenated. Oh yes, fatigue improves significantly in most people who make these dramatic changes.
Would you, while we're on that point, give us your contact information for the Lifestyle Center?
The Lifestyle Center of America can be identified on the web at www.lifestylecenter.org.
And a phone number for contact?
A good phone number is 580-99327, Lifestyle Center of America.
Now, I would invite our listeners to join us in our next presentation as we explore more or less what are some of the things that listeners can do, you know, the high-density food, high-mineral-density food, low-caloric foods, and so on and so forth. So we invite our listeners to tune in to our next presentation. And we would like to say thank you very much, Dr. George Guthrie, joining us from Oklahoma, Lifestyle Centers of America.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you, Peter.
You're welcome.